The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Thank you, Ryushin. Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me? Yep, great. Well, you know, it's wonderful to be here. It's extremely hot and humid. I imagine it is where you are, too. But I thought I would just start by sharing a piece of, I found it to be good news. And that was, I was taking my usual walk outside my house here in Western Mass where I live. And it's the five college area. And I happened to be near one of the colleges. And there were students, you know, the freshmen were there. It was orientation. They were gathered in circles and doing games and dyads conversations. And, oh, you know, it's been two falls now that I haven't seen this. And it was just so beautiful, such an ordinary thing. Students going to college and, yeah, they were wearing masks. It's not the same, but it was just, I just lifted my heart, my spirits. Of course, we did not have that experience. We were just coming off of our Ango period. And as anybody in this room knows who was planning on our first in-person retreat after a long time, we didn't get to do that. And it was, for me, terribly disappointing, and I think it was for everyone else. But I will say part of what lifted it for me was the text itself that we were studying, which was, as you probably know, Dogen's instruction for the Tenzo. The Tenzo is the cook for the community. And what I particularly appreciate about this text is sort of the instructions for how we practice when we're not on the cushion. Dogen is very well known for giving great explanation about how we do our sitting practice. And this text really helps us to see how that practice translates in activity. The interesting thing, though, is that while it provides a lot of detail about the procurement and the preparation of the ingredients, there's actually no instructions on the ingredients themselves. We don't know what Dogen recommends for nutrition, the particular flavors or characteristics that might be helpful for a monastic community. That best support a sitting practice, that's not in there. Now, we do have instructions for eating in other places. And for us, I think the most common place where we see that is in our meal chat. So if we had been in person at the session, part of what we would have chanted is, you know, we eat to support our life, we eat to stop all suffering, to practice good, to save all sentient beings, and to accomplish our Buddha way. So it's clear that not only cooking and serving, but also the practice of eating is a bodhisattva practice. So as you probably also know, the last Thursday of the month is a talk on the precepts. And I thought it would be interesting to look at the precept that specifically addresses what we take into our body. And it's a caution about what we might take in that would not support our practice. And it offers us an opportunity, I think, to consider what would support our practice when we take something in. And so this is the fifth grave precept of not giving and taking drugs. So, you know, for me, like I think all the precepts, it at first raises more questions than it answers. And I'll name some of the questions that came up for me. What do we mean by drug? And are there conditions under which drug or drugs are actually okay? What about those people or cultures that have used drugs throughout history? You know, don't you think it would be incredibly arrogant to say that all those people have a problem with their culture? What about those cultures that use drugs as part of their religious practice or spiritual practice as a means of awakening? I think it would be a mistake to deny that some drugs actually can offer an experience of interconnectedness and awakening. And then what about all those people that use drugs to relax, relieve stress, ease anxiety, sleep better, you know, stop their suffering, or simply to have fun? Now, in some ways, I think this topic itself is undergoing a huge shift at this moment in America. So here in Massachusetts, marijuana is now legal. And there are cannabis dispensaries everywhere. And I mean, like, everywhere I look, there's a new one that's popping up. Now, the cannabis is highly refined. It's technologically sophisticated. You know, it's not your mother's weed. Now you can have gummy bears. It has actually all the characteristics of a pharmaceutical. And I would assume, although I don't know this, including the funding and the profit. But what I have to say here is the fact that so many people, and usually people of color, ended up in jail or with criminal records or with families torn apart and in devastation to the communities. Now we have societies saying, oh, in fact, it's not so bad after all. And this deeply bothers me. But it doesn't bother me that we've made this shift. But it is good to remember that there's always many sides to a change. So the way I would answer some of those last questions I raised about how do we view this in the context of understanding and knowing that other cultures do very, very different things with us, and many of our people that we're connected to make different choices around this, is to remember, well, at least for me, that the precepts are not actually a code of ethics in the way we kind of understand ethics as being this prescription, as something that we're all supposed to do in order to, you know, have civilization. It's helpful not to think of them as value judgments. And while they can be taken literally, and it can be very helpful actually to take them literally, I find it most helpful to relate to them according to this moment's causes and conditions. They don't really have anything to do with whether something is legal or not, right? So the precept itself hasn't changed just because our society has changed its laws. And the purpose in Zen for this precept, as well as the others, is to support our practice. It's our practice of sitters of Zazen and bodhisattvas. So they're not statements about other forms of religion, other forms of spirituality, what society is supposed to do with itself. For me, we're talking about what are the practices I can engage in that will help my Zen practice of awakening. So let's talk a little bit about what we mean by drugs. So I thought it would be interesting to look at how some other Zen sanghas have translated this precept. Here's what I found. Abstain from intoxicants, which cloud the mind. Abstain from anything that causes intoxication. Abstain from intoxicating drinks and drugs causing heedlessness. Abstain from the use of intoxicating substances that cause inattention. Actually, I think the Zen peacemaker's understanding and interpretation of this kind of sums up all of these. What it says is, cultivating a mind that sees clearly, this is the precept of not being ignorant. So what does that mean? How do we cultivate a mind that sees clearly? Well, in instructions for the Tenzo, Dogen says, put those things that naturally go on a high place onto a high place, and those things that would be most stable on a low place on a low place, so that high or low, everything settles in the place appropriate for it. This seems, you know, simple, but think of all the ways in your life where actually knowing how something should be and what place it should be and what your place actually is, it's not so easy to see. This can only be done when you see clearly. And in fact, this is what our practice is. When we don't attach to every passing thought, but let the thoughts go. We investigate those thoughts that keep coming up so that they would be willing to go. That's cultivating a mind that sees clearly. Second part of this Zen peacemaker's interpretation is about ignorance. What is being ignorance? Well, we could say all the things that are talked about by these various translations. We could say it's a state that results in intoxication. The intoxication could be with our personal ideas and opinions, you know, with our ego. It can be an intoxication with our cravings, shopping, eating, surfing the internet. Can be intoxication with substances. And it's, I think, important to know that I think all these intoxications can result in addiction. Addiction to substances, addiction to our habitual actions, and addiction to certain patterns of thinking and feeling. In fact, it may be that one definition of an intoxicant, whether it's a thing or an activity, is that it has the potential to cause addiction. The intoxicant's a hook that can catch us, and then we're not free to respond according to the moment's requirements or respond with our whole being. Another aspect of ignorance is that clouding, the clouding of the mind. So there are many reasons why our minds can be clouded, right? Our minds can be clouded because of insufficient education or exposure to ideas. Never has a chance to blossom and develop. It could be because of a lack of training in thinking or training to be aware of our feelings or intuition, right? Think of everything we're learning about how our education system works. And that causes ultimately a kind of clouding. And it can also be a dulling or numbing of our feelings and thoughts as a means to help us cope with our suffering. And of course, ignorance can be seen as heedlessness or inattention. And so we can see how drugs, whether we're talking about the literal pharmaceutical drug, type drug, you know, narcotic, or any of the other addictive or intoxicating activities, can prevent us from seeing clearly and fully realizing our Buddha nature. Bodhidharma says, self-nature is subtle and mysterious. In the realm of the intrinsically pure Dharma, not giving rise to delusions is called the precept of not giving or taking drugs. So what's not giving rise to delusions? Well, delusions arise when we think we need to modify or enhance or improve our life, when we need to escape from our loneliness or anxiety. We want to augment our experience in some way because it feels insufficient, distract ourselves because we're bored, soothe ourselves because we're anxious. And these are actually the reasons why we use drugs in the broadest sense of the word. And so when we aren't using drugs, there's no place for delusions to enter. When we are on the cushion and bringing our mind back to the present, we've interrupted the drug of habitual thinking. And at that moment, we are intrinsically pure and there are no delusions. Dogen says, drugs are not brought in yet. Don't let them invade. That is the great light. Dogen's reminding us that Buddha nature is pure and undefiled. It's always light. It doesn't matter whether we are having bad feelings, ugly thoughts, terrible moments. You can say whether we're mad, sad, or glad, we're still experiencing our Buddha nature. Drugs can cause confusion and delusion, but our Buddha nature is still there. So we bring in food and nourishment and don't bring in drugs. There's a koan I was reminded of in relation to both the Zen peacemakers and Bodhidharma and Dogen's instructions to us. Yunmin said, "I don't ask you about before the 15th day. Try to say something about after the 15th day." Yunmin himself answered for everyone, "Every day is a good day." So how do we get to that good day without drugs? Well, we can use, I think, the same instructions that Dogen gave for the Intenso in the instructions for the Intenso. And here, Dogen is talking specifically about three different qualities of shin. Shin is the heart mind, okay? We don't just refer to the mind, we don't just refer to the heart. It's all one, the heart mind. So the first of those is Kishin, joyful mind, or joyful heart. Dogen describes this as rejoicing in gratitude at our birth, at being human, and at having the opportunity to practice the Dharma and awaken to our Buddha nature. So drugs may cause happiness, and that's a feeling that comes out of external conditions, a response to what we're perceiving and experiencing in the world. But joy is not based on any external condition. And I really feel that recognizing this is part of our practice of Zen. And intoxicating substances and intoxicating activities are by their nature self-involved. And so to the extent that they do inspire feelings of gratitude, we can get a release from their addictive qualities. But if they're not inspiring those feelings of joyful mind, then the addiction is still there. Roshin, parental mind or heart. Dogen describes this as a practice of love, regardless of conditions. Now, I can tell you that there are many different ways of being a parent. And I learned this the hard way when I was a parent of a small child and nobody was doing it the way I thought that they should, you know. Everybody is going to find their own path. Everybody has to do it their way, according to what works for them. But the thing that all parents have in common when they're being a parent is that they are not separating their self, their role as a parent, and their child. So they're in offering care and attention, the parent sees the child as themselves. But there's a huge caution here, and it's also the same caution around drugs, because that is not the same thing as merging or having no boundaries, right? We know the real dangers of that when people don't have that awareness. The boundaries are still maintained, and there's not the danger of the kind of merging that comes with drugs. And this comes up again in the last shin, Daishin. Vast heart, vast mind, also translated as magnanimous mind. Dogen says, this is being without prejudice and refusing to take sides. When carrying something that weighs an ounce, do not think of it as light. And likewise, when you have to carry 50 pounds, do not think of it as heavy. Now, the word vast is probably the closest word to what Dogen was talking about, but the problem that I see with it is that is exactly what I was talking about earlier with that blurring of boundaries that can come with drugs. When we think of something vast, we think of everything opening up, and therefore everything could be possible, which maybe shouldn't be possible. So the experience of vastness that you might get from drugs can be a problem without the guidance of a teacher or the support of a community. And in Zen, in fact, there can be a kind of ego inflation that comes with that. We call that the stink of Zen. When people experience that non-separation, don't have anything grounding them down. So I actually like the word magnanimous in this context, because magnanimous includes generosity and forgiveness. And I think it's possible that some of the cravings that we experience, whether it's for drugs or any of those other habitual activities, or that give rise to the need for drugs, come because we haven't figured out how to forgive and how to be generous. So I feel that if we can deeply practice with, and work with Kishin, Roshin, and Daishin, then I think we would find that every day is a good day. So I'm going to end this with the last precept that I found on the internet. And it's from the Order of Interbeing. That's Thich Nhat Hanh's group. And it's interesting because they don't even call them precepts. They call them mindfulness trainings. So this is the fifth mindfulness training, Nourishment and Healing. I hope you like this as much as I did. I just found it very moving. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I am committed to cultivating good health, both physical and mental, for myself, my family, and my society by practicing mindful eating, drinking, and consuming. I will practice looking deeply into how I consume the four kinds of nutriments, namely edible foods, sense impressions, volition, and consciousness. I am determined not to gamble or to use alcohol, drugs, or any other products which contain certain toxins, such as websites, electronic games, TV programs, films, magazines, books, and conversations. I will practice coming back to the present moment to be in touch with the refreshing, healing and nourishing elements in me and around me, not letting regrets and sorrow drag me back into the past, nor letting anxieties, fear, or craving pull me out of the present moment. I am determined not to try to cover up loneliness, anxiety, or other suffering by losing myself in consumption. I will contemplate interbeing and consume in such a way that preserves peace, joy, and well-being in my body and consciousness, and in the collective body and consciousness of my family, my society, and the earth.